Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Norma Mintz, and today we will be studying Daniel Perek Tet, Chapter 9. Yesterday we learned the 8th Perek, in which Daniel had a vision of a ram and a he-goat. Daniel learns that the ram represents Paras and Madai, and the goat represents Greece. After the ram first does great damage, the goat kills the ram and he continues to grow. One of his horns grows in the direction of the land of Israel. It also grows to heaven, where it tramples stars and hurts the prince of the heavens, and the temple service is disrupted due to this goat. Daniel overhears two holy ones discussing what is going on, saying that it will continue until 2300. The angel Gabriel explains much of the vision to Daniel, and he clarifies that the vision is speaking about, quote-unquote, the end. Gabriel tells Daniel that eventually the king represented by the goat will ultimately die at God's hands, and he instructs that Daniel not publicize the details of this vision, as it is for the distant future. At the close of the Perek, Daniel is distressed and ill from what he has seen. Perek Tet, Chapter 9, opens in the first year of the reign of Darius, of Daryavesh the Mede. If you recall, this was the king mentioned in Perek Vav, the Perek in which Daniel is thrown into the lion's pit, and this Daryavesh is identified in Sefer Daniel as the first to reign after the fall of Babel. Daniel explains that at this time he examined the prophecy of Yirmiyahu that promised redemption to the people of Yehuda following a 70-year period of the destruction of Yerushalayim. This is referencing the 29th Perek of Yirmiyahu, Pasuk Yud, or Ted, where it states, Ki cho amar Hashem, כי לפים לוט לבבל 70 שנה, אפקוד אתכם, והכימותי עליכם את דברי הטוב להשיב אתכם אל המקום הזה. For thus said the Lord, when Babylon's 70 years are over, I will take note of you, and I will fulfill to you my promise of favor to bring you back to this place. The language of our Perek in Daniel states, binoti, which might be translated as, I meditated or I considered seriously. Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and even an opinion cited in the Gemara explain that this pasuk reflects Daniel's recognition that he miscalculated when Yirmiyahu's prophesied 70 years would end. Rashi explains that Daniel had assumed that Yirmiyahu's 70 years likely began with the expulsion of Jehoiakim, former king of Yehuda, which took place in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. According to such a calculation, they should have just reached the completion of the 70-year period. But since, of course, we do not yet see a return to Yerushalayim, Daniel here re-examines his assumptions and considers that perhaps the 70 years begin with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash 18 years later. In fact, according to the calculations of Seder Olam Rabbah, the Midrashic work, such a calculation will bring us to the declaration of the Persian King Cyrus that allows the Judeans to return to Yerushalayim to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. The Malbim takes it one step further, explaining that Daniel believed that the 70-year period could have begun with either date, depending on the worthiness of the Jews at the time. As such, the Malbim explains that Daniel turns to God in prayer in this Perek because he hopes it will bring about the actualization of the end of the 70-year exile. This corresponds to the verse we raised yesterday from Yeshayahu, Ani Hashem bi'ita achishena, I the Lord will hasten it in due time. Yesterday we explained that this may reflect two understandings of redemption. If they are worthy, I will hasten it. If they are not worthy, it will be in its time. What is more, the Malbim's explanation also makes sense in the context of Yirmiyahu's original prophecy, as he continues and states, Ukratem oti v'halachtem, v'hitpalalaltem elai, v'shamati elechem. And you shall call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will hearken unto you. In this manner, through heartfelt tefillah, or prayer, as Hashem seems to anticipate and even require, perhaps Daniel hoped that he could bring about the redemption period. The tefillah that Daniel expresses is one that may sound quite familiar, as much of it is the basis for the prayer we use for the extended tachanun, or supplication prayer, that is recited on Mondays and Thursdays. The first portion of Daniel's tefillah takes place in verses 3 through 15. This prayer consists of vidui, or confession, for the Jews as a whole. This is not a personal confession or a request for forgiveness. It is a public acknowledgement of Bnei Israel's collective wrongdoings and an acceptance of Hashem's will in punishing the nation as he has. In the second part of Daniel's prayer, verses 15 through 19, Daniel turns to God with a plea to return his people to Yerushalayim for God's own sake. He argues that the restoration of Yerushalayim will be a Kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of God's name. While Daniel is concluding his tefillah, he is approached by the angel Gabriel, who helped him to understand his vision in the previous parak. Here too, he comes to clarify matters for Daniel. He tells Daniel that he is, according to verse 23, Chamudot, or beloved to God, who sent Gabriel to help Daniel understand. The first thing that he clarifies is that Daniel should not merely concern himself with the counting of 70 years. He either corrects Daniel's understanding or he adds to it, explaining that there is apparently a further set of numbers that is important for the fate of Bnei Israel. Gabriel states in verse 24, Shavuim shivim nechtach al amcha v'al ir kodshacha, l'chale ha-pesha u'lehatem chatad u'lechaper avon, u'lehavi tzedek olamim, v'lachtom chazon v'navi v'limshoach kodesh kodashim. 70 weeks, or perhaps 70 weeks of years, meaning 70 times 7, are decreed upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression, and to make an end of sin, and to forgive iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal vision and prophet, and to anoint the most holy place. It seems that Bnei Israel will not be ready for the ultimate redemption as soon as was hoped. Instead, they will have to wait a period of 70 sabbaticals, or 70 periods of 7 years, in order to erase the misdeeds of Bnei Israel. This calculates to 490 years, which Seder Olam Rabba states is the period of time between the first destruction of the temple and 70 years of exile, plus the 420 years that the second temple stood until its destruction. In fact, as Rashi explains this, this is not to say that at the close of the 490 years we will achieve redemption. Rashi instead understands that these 490 years bring us to the exile of Titus, at which point we will enter the final period of difficulty, meaning the one that we are still currently in now, until we will reach the ultimate redemption of Mashiach ben David. The Malbim further emphasizes that the rebuilding of the second Beit HaMikdash is not considered the Ge'ulah, the redemption, at all, as there were so many deficiencies in that period, as we will soon encounter in our learning of the book of Ezra Nehemiah. The Malbim argues that since we lost the power of prophecy in that time, since we did not have a king from the house of David, and since we have elements missing from the temple, such as the Urim, Batumim, and the Shekhinah, or the presence of Hashem that rested upon the Beit HaMikdash, it is clear that it was not actually a period of Ge'ulah, but a potential period we could have used to hasten the coming of Mashiach that unfortunately passed us by. So what is it that lies ahead of us according to the explanation of Gabriel? In Pasuk 25, he breaks down the 70 sabbaticals. First, he states that there will first be a period of 7 sabbaticals, or 49 years, from the time of when the word went out until a Mashiach, or an anointed prince, arrives to rebuild Yerushalayim. Then, there will be 62 weeks of years, meaning 435 years, during which Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, but these will also be times of trouble. In verses 26 and 27, we have the final week of years, or the last 7-year period. These psukim are very difficult to understand, certainly conceptually, but even literally. I will bring 2 different approaches, but many questions remain, and much of this may lie beyond our comprehension at this time. The final period will have a new anointed one, as certainly the anointed Mashiach of the first period is no longer alive, 435 years later, and this leader will bring about some kind of destruction for the Beit HaMikdash. The psukim also seem to indicate that he will come to an end, or perhaps the temple will come to an end, with some kind of inundation. Within that final period, the prince will offer to strengthen his covenant with those in high positions, but he will not honor that covenant, and one half of the sabbatical will include a time during which the Mashiach abolishes all temple worship and brings about its ceasing. According to Rashi's understanding of these 3 verses, the first period described of 49 years is from the time of the destruction of the Mikdash, and the anointed one referenced in the Pasuk is Koresh or Cyrus. Rashi explains that this is the case, even though he counts 52 years between the destruction and Koresh, as he assumes that the three extra years were not included since they do not make up a complete Shemitah cycle. Now, it may sound strange to interpret the Tanakh calling a non-Jewish king Mashiach, but it is important to remember the literal meaning of the word, which is an anointed king. I have not counted, but my understanding is that its most frequent usage in Tanakh is in this manner, having nothing to do with the end of days and not specifically tied to the descendant of King David. Rashi then understands the second time period to be the whole Second Temple period, which can understandably be characterized as a period of expansion, but also a period of trouble. The Second Beit HaMikdash was a complicated time for much of the period it stood, with significant corruption during much of its history. Finally, Rashi believes the final period references Titus's destruction of the Second Beit HaMikdash. He believes that Titus will promise a covenant with Judea in the final 7 years, but he will then betray this covenant, bringing desecration and destruction to the Beit HaMikdash. Rashi interprets the cutoff Mashiach of verse 26 to be Agrippa, the final Judean king. He asserts Titus's misdeeds will not be fully healed or ended until Ketz Milchama, which he understands not as the end of the war, but of the final war, that of Gog, preceding the coming of Mashiach ben David. The Pirush of Dat Mikra by Yehuda Kiel and Shmuel Kohen argues that the destructive force of the final psukim is none other than Antiochus IV, the ruler during the time of the Hanukkah story. Dat Mikra thus advances the theory that the Hasmonean period had the potential to have brought about the Messianic period, but that it did not achieve that potential. As such, Daniel's vision is reflective of a statement brought by Tosfot Nivamot 50a, Ein Hanavi Mitnabe Elamash Ra'oi Lihiyot Im Lo Haya Choteh. A Navi prophesies regarding what should come about, assuming one does not sin. Unfortunately, the Second Temple period was not what it could have been for many reasons, among them the unenthusiastic return of too small a percentage of the exiles, and also the ultimate corruption of the leadership of the time. Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, in his work The Kuzari, writes that the divine influence is granted to people based on their ability to receive it, and presumably the generation was simply not ready to receive God's redemption. Before I close for today, I will recall that one of the first podcasts for this sefer, I referenced one of Rabbi Tarfon's famous statements from Pirkei Avot, Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, velo ata ben chorin livatel mimena. It is not upon you to finish the work, but neither are you free to desist from it. In many ways, the learning of Sefer Daniel is a perfect example of this worldview. We are told multiple times in the sefer itself that the visions are obscured from us and that we will not be able to truly understand them, perhaps until they are fully realized. And yet, we were given these works in order for us to learn them and to learn from them. So we turn to them for answers and meaning, but also sometimes for questions that remain unanswered, but that we should continue to ask. In conclusion, today we learn Daniel Perek Tet, Chapter 9, in which Daniel prays for the 70 years of Yirmiyahu to conclude. In his tefillah, Daniel recognizes the sins of Bnei Israel, but asks Hashem to bring about the redemption of his people for God's own glory. The angel Gabriel then comes to Daniel to tell him about 70 sabbaticals that must pass before the true redemption can come about. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.